I love our new intro pictures, that montage. What do you think? Would you like that pastiche, Ian?
Yeah, you know, that music sounds like someone hired The Edge to write they bought one of his B-sides to play in an elevator or something.
I think they said write a soulless piece of inner, like, elevator music. But I like the montage that went with it. We had Bevo, we had Late Lake, we had Town Lake, we had the 360 Bridge. I loved it. Dig it.
I liked it. I like the music. I like the sort of Edge infinite guitar sounding kind of deal.
There you go. All right. Welcome to the Deep Dive Live. And all of y'all will help it thrive because you submitted questions a couple of weeks ago. We picked a half dozen of them and we are going to address them. And we are really excited to talk to all of you. And we love the live setting. And of course, we'll try to address any comments that are happening during the live. Roaster, welcome. Hook 'em. All right, folks, let us begin. Our producer is already trying. He's busy in the chat already. He needs to know not to talk to the talent when they're doing their stuff. We're artists, Ian, right?
Absolutely.
All right. So I want your artistic and analytical impression of this excellent question. What's Jonah Williams' ideal role in the defense 3 years from now, down the road? Maybe can you come up with a former UT player, even a non-UT player comp? Do you see a little different role for him? Do you see a role for him this year to get him on the field potentially?
So the kick is here.
We have a baby in need of attention and wants to be a part of this, understandably. She can feel the excitement.
I think.
Great.
I think this year he's going to get on the field in dime.
Okay.
I think his best use is playing around the box and around the ball. I think he can do that 3 years down the line at safety. I was going to just make him a linebacker, but then I watched his high school film again, and his mobility and his ball skills are so good.
Yeah.
So I think he can actually just play on the back end, even though he's going to play at like 220 probably eventually.
Yeah, that's the thought. He's about 6'3", 210 right now. He'll probably be 220, 225. He's got to be careful not to drive his weight too far up, right?
Yep.
But I do think he has the mobility to stay at safety. I'm actually more leery of him playing this year because he didn't participate in the spring that meaningfully. He played baseball. Don't you think he's going to be a little bit behind to install a package for him?
I think he's going to play. I think they are intending that he'd be able to play in dime and just get around the ball.
And they'll just say see ball, chase ball.
And third down packages. Yeah. she wants to be active today. I also hear my player cops for Texas. I can't think of many guys like him at Texas.
I can't think of a safety like that. I mean, we've had big safeties, but they didn't quite have his athleticism or mobility.
Overshown did, but he's not exactly like Overshown.
But he wasn't a safety.
But yeah,
if we think he's going to stay at safety.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I put also.
So Jason Hall was a big safety for us.
Yeah,
Jonah Williams has more athleticism.
Yeah, yeah. I put down Kyle Hamilton. That's the easy one. Who's currently with the Baltimore Ravens.
It's pretty good.
Cam Chancellor, basically just the previous generation's Kyle Hamilton.
Sean Taylor.
Even older, yeah. He could be like one of those guys, I think. I think that's pretty realistic.
Big safety, but mobile.
Tanner Muse of Clemson, who played safety up until the national championship game and then played linebacker and the Raiders, I think. Somebody says Kenny Vaccaro. He's a lot bigger than Kenny Vaccaro.
A taller Earl Thomas. Well, I mean, when you have to add 5 inches to the comp, you sort of lose the thread a little bit, right?
Yeah, he's not Earl Thomas.
It's like saying, you know, this guard is like a 6'3" Karl Malone, right? It's not quite. Kenny Vaccaro is good. Kenny was a big safety and very mobile, so I like that. He didn't have the length of Jonah Williams, but I like Kenny Vaccaro. He was a bigger safety who could really flip his hips and cover ground.
Vaccaro and Isaiah Simmons were both like that.
Yeah.
I don't know if Jonah Williams can turn and run with people that way. If he can, then Isaiah Simmons is probably a solid cop too.
Yeah, I think Jonah will disrupt more with his length and his wingspan. I mean, being 6'3 back at safety, and if you're pretty mobile, it's a problem for quarterbacks. A lot of routes that they think are open, he can close or get his hand on. Yeah, Earl Thomas is about 5'10", 5'11".
Yeah.
But an amazing safety. What do you think? Have we addressed this question sufficiently?
So you're hesitant to see him on the field this year.
I mean, he didn't play. He didn't participate in the spring. So you think?
Yeah, I know.
Do you think he's such a great athlete that they're just gonna be like, we don't care. We're just going to get him on the field.
Eric has indicated that seems to be the thinking.
Okay.
That would be just, you would do it in dime, I would think, where he's like a pseudo linebacker.
Another 6'3" guy who can run and is mobile and is aggressive, who can blitz. Like, how many of these guys do we have on our defense? It's ridiculous.
A lot.
Golly.
I was watching Ann Hill in the playoffs the other day for a video we're going to do, me and LC and Charlie, about the middle linebacker position in this defense. And there was a lot of times last year where Anthony Hill almost played like a box safety.
Oh, yeah.
They just like kind of put him out in space and let him run around. And he is
so many guys like that.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Yeah, there's no other team in college football that, you know, Georgia had that sort of printing press of 6'5", 260-pound like edge types. You're like, where do they get all these guys? We have a little smaller version that's more linebackery, edgy, but we've got like 6 of these guys. It's crazy.
Yeah. Do we have another Andrew? We have 2, maybe. We have Trelawney McDonald and Derek Williams, health permitting. And then potentially Phil Sommy if and when he figures out how to play safety.
So he's a guy that more than anyone, I wish we would have had a spring game. I would have liked to have seen Folsame, like how he's come along. Because his spring game as a freshman was was disastrous.
Yeah.
Understandably, but nonetheless. All right, I think we hit this question. Hey, you know who the comp might be after this year? Jelani McDonald.
Yeah. I got a better look at McDonald recently.
Yeah.
And he's just I think Jonah is thicker built. Just bigger, okay. Wider frame.
Interesting.
Real quick.
Similar height though, right?
Jonah needs to not have a football approach in all ways on the baseball diamond.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
deserves a high fast one for the stuff he was trying to pull.
I agree.
I don't know if they still do that or not, but can you imagine what Nolan Ryan would do to him?
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I'll have to remember to bring that up with my co-host on Everyone Gets a Trophy.
Yes, Randy Boone. Please. Everybody's going to be begging.
I already anticipate what Randy's answer will be. It would involve a fastball to the ear.
Yeah.
And if you're feeling nice, maybe to his back. But hey, he'll learn. He's young. Let's move on. Unless there's any commentary from the questions we want to bring up. Nope. In a room. A running back room of 6 RBs, including 2 true freshmen and 2 more coming back from significant injuries. Is that really enough for a 16-game season? Being optimistic, assuming we project far to the playoffs. Ian, I've had some consternation about our running back room. Connor, our excellent producer, shares that with me. Do you feel the same, or has offseason reports about Christian Clark's amazing recovery, has that heartened you a little bit?
That has heartened me. The discussion of scheme development has heartened me. But I will say, here's the thing you worry about, is Baxter comes back. He's just not ready.
Yeah.
Clark injures himself trying to get back. Trey Wisner injures himself because he had 280 touches last year at 190 pounds, and his body wears down. And all of a sudden, and then like Jarrett Gibson starts fumbling because of the pressure of the moment. You know, if I don't know if there's a lack of bodies so much as a lack of guys that, you know, you can count on to be a workhorse for a contending team.
Yeah, it's not a lack of bodies. It's a potential lack of able or ready bodies.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't doubt that we'll have a human being playing running back. I don't doubt that that will happen. The question is how productive they are. Is it a freshman because of injuries? Is it, you know, all sorts of scenarios? Given that we've sort of realized college football is now pro football,
yep.
As a GM, I might have made some hard business decisions in this offseason in remaking this locker room, in remaking that running back room. But we didn't. We chose to stick with our guys. And there may be good reason for that because these guys, they – look, our staff does see these guys every day, or at least, you know, the S&C staff sees them, and they're reporting like how these guys are looking, what it's looking like. And if, so if we're confident in our guys, then that gives me some confidence. But from the outside looking in, I might have remade the running back room this offseason.
Yeah, this is partly why I was not like that broken up about Tashard Choice leaving. It's because the way it stacked up the room didn't feel that laudable.
Yeah.
I mean, he got unlucky with injuries, sure. But maybe to your point, if they hadn't had a coaching change in the offseason, they would have been a little more aggressive about changing up the room.
Yeah, so I would say the coaching change is all the more reason to change up the room because you're bringing in your guys and guys that run and have fit your mold and your taste. Have you noticed every time I say something, Izzy agrees with me? Just saying.
They seem to feel good about where guys are being. We'll see if they're right.
Yep, we shall see. All right, let's move on. Next question. Mr. Boyd, if you are so kind, can you read that to the good people?
Has Sark primarily run the gap scheme that he's moving to this year? Was this move – so real quick, I think they're asking, has Sark made heavy use of GT counter before?
Historically, was Sark a gap scheme guy?
Was this move based on the talent along the line at quarterback, or is he going back to a more comfortable offense? I think this is actually a little bit different for him and Flood. Not necessarily gap scheme. They've always had that, but maybe gap scheme with – backside quarterback option is not something that they've majored in before. I don't think it's that hard. I think they can get it. And I think this is related largely to the talent at quarterback and tight end and not like a pivot back to something in the past.
Was it USC heavy gap scheme?
They moved to zone early under Carroll. And they were pretty mixed, but I think they were zone when they could be, at least.
I guess I just have in my mind, I remember some pulling linemen. But yeah. I think they kind of did a lot.
Yes, I think so too.
At Washington, I can't remember. Obviously, he used Locker's legs some as a constraint. But he had some workhorse running backs at Washington, and I don't remember what scheme they used predominantly.
I actually don't either. That's probably worth looking back at.
Falcons, pure zone.
Yeah.
Pure zone.
He mixed it up a little bit.
Devontae Freeman, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That's a zone runner.
He took over for Shanahan, so.
Yeah, I mean, you're not going to change that.
And they had that center that was like an all-time wide zone. Like
he could, like, hook three techniques.
Yeah. Yeah. What was this, like Alex Mack or something like that?
Yes. Old Cal center. So why do you think we made this move? Do you think this is to fit the running back room? Do you think it's fit to fit the talents of our offensive line? Or do you think it's because Arch is our quarterback? Or do you think Stark just wants to do this?
I think it suits the guards. It's better for DJ Campbell and Meadow. They can pull around more, which they're good at. I think it suits Arch's ability to offer a backside constraint. I think it can help him protect the tight ends from tough blocks, which is big. So that's, I mean, it's a lot of reasons. It solves a lot of problems.
Can you just very quickly, low-level explanation, explain the backside constraint idea for folks, just so they know what you're referring to?
Yeah. You can run GT counter a gap scheme. It's a gap scheme. And you pull both backside linemen to the play side. And then the way you make that work without the defense just running through from the backside is you leave that end unblocked. And the quarterback reads him like Vince Young would on a zone read.
There you go.
So it's the exact same idea as zone read, only instead of running zone away from the quarterback's read, you're running gap.
So on the play side, where you're running to, where you're sending those two pulling linemen, those linemen are blocking down, and they're accounting for all the stuff inside. So that edge who's on the outside, what if he just – sprints off the line and undercuts your pullers and disrupts everything? Well, if your quarterback has a risk to pull it and keep it around that edge, there's going to be 15 yards of green, right?
Yeah.
So that's why you would do it. And people say, well, why would you do that last year? Well, Quinn Ewers was our quarterback. He's not a great or instinctive runner, and he was injured and banged up, and we were not going to use him in that way. So I think that's something we're going to see more of, and I think Ian is correct. So I think it's a combination of the O-line and what Arch allows us to do. Is that a fair short answer?
Yeah, and I'd say the tight ends too.
Yep. Our tight ends aren't maulers at the point of attack, and so this is a way that it could help them become more of a screener.
Yeah.
Downside of this approach?
Downfield.
I don't love our play action off of some of these looks, because we don't always account for penetrators off the edge. And sometimes on that pull, when we pull it on play action and drop back, we ask a tight end to take an edge. And that doesn't always work out great for us.
Yeah.
So you can't really got to sell the play action part of it.
You can do it off the normal counter instead of the GT.
Yep.
And that's a little more, that's better.
Better protection.
The tight end is still – this is why Jack Andrews was another reason why he was such a big addition, is that he's not an amazing blocker in any regard, but he's not going to let guys run free on play action.
You can't let someone run inside of you or through you at tight end. Yeah. You've got to just be a road bump, and if you're enough of one, the quarterback can get the ball off.
He is a speed bump for sure, but yeah, he's still a speed bump.
Absolutely. Hey, folks, there could be speed bumps in your financial life if you don't go with the right mortgage guy. I'm going to give you a green light. This guy, you're going to go 80 miles an hour with. This is Gabe Winslow. You could reach him at 832-557-1095. Why Gabe? Over 20 years in the industry, he's a proud UT graduate who's just as insane about the horns as we are. He's got a law degree, former National Merit Scholar. This guy is really sharp and really good at what he does. If you don't believe me, go read his Google reviews. He's got over 200 of them, and it's paragraph after paragraph raving about how Gabe solved some unique problem that allowed people to buy a house when they didn't think that they were going to be able to. This is a guy you want in your quarter for the biggest financial transaction of your life, buying a house. Go with the best, go with the guy who's sharp, and go with the guy who's going to treat you right and has great ethics. That's Gabe, 832-557-1095. All right. Next question. Mr. Boyd, you did such a good job. I'm going to let you read another question.
Question goes, do we all predict more high scoring games this year taking over? I'd say yes. Actually, almost broached this morning when I gave Arch Manning stats last year in play action. I think Texas is going to score quickly more often next year. And that'll mean higher possession counts in games and
more plays.
More plays. Now, Sark will try to adjust. He'll get to 30, 40 points faster, and then he'll slow down sooner.
Whoa.
But I still think it'll be an effect. I did not write that question. How dare you, Splendid Eddie.
So I love Steve Sarkisian. I love everything he's done for this university. I think he represents the program amazingly. He's one of the few coaches I can love and watch one of his press conferences. However, all gas, no breaks is a lie. It's a lie. It's okay. It's okay. He does everything else right. But the truth is, as Ian said, once Sark gets his points on the board, he's running out the clock and he's running the football. That's what he wants to do. So I will say high scoring games, the main thing that I think argues for Ian's contention that I'd agree with is we're going to score faster, more deep balls, more plays, more possession. That's going to result in more points. High scoring games takes two to tango. If our defense is playing great, once we get our points on the board, we'll cruise it out. That's just how it's going to be. Now, if you think our defense is going to take a step back and we're going to get scored on more beyond just the more possessions, then yeah, we're going to have to score more and we're going to have to be a little more all gas and no breaks.
If you win more games 50 to 30, 50 to 24, because your second and third team defense are out there, then you are giving up higher scoring games, even if your defense is even better than the year before. So that's possible as well.
Yeah, I mean, typically that's not how it goes. We don't always separate from people, right, to the degree that we're putting out our second and third team guys. I'm not talking about Sam Houston State.
Right.
I'm talking about Arkansas.
Yeah.
Did we blow right. that out of the water?
See, right? But I think we might now. Maybe. The play action game is going to be so much better that I think these like more mid-level teams that Texas would kind of keep at arm's length, I think with Arch, they just get knocked out for a second round.
That's a good thing for us to watch this season and see. Yeah. But I've said before, I've asserted before, and I think this is correct. I believe it. Steve Sarkisian, one of the things I love about him is he doesn't think the game like the wunderkind offensive coordinator who can't just wait to get his offense on the field, right? Yeah. He views the game as a total head coach, both in recruiting, development, and also game management. And he would rather win a game 31-13 than 51-34.
Him and DeBoer.
That's just his predilection.
Yeah. Well, it's better.
It is better.
If you can do it.
Yeah.
Which is, it takes more skill to do that.
So I would say the high scoring games thing isn't just what we're going to do on offense, but you're also making a prediction about our defense. Izzy agrees. All right. What do you guys, anything else more on that question, Ian?
Nope.
All right, I'm going to let you read again. You're doing an amazing job.
The show and the picture more. What areas must Texas maintain or improve to stay top four yearly? Is it coaching staff, recruiting support, NIL? And I think this is separate part of the question. Where do we already outshine rivals in infrastructure? I think the biggest improvement would be to actually build more infrastructure around NIL. The way I understand it, how it works right now, is not anywhere near as organized and institutional as you would think by the rate of success. I think the rate of success Texas is having in NIL has to do a lot with Sarkisian being involved in it. Current enthusiasm, and then just Texas's breadth of donors who have the kind of money to give to that.
Yep. I think you nailed it. I think that's exactly right. I would like to see more coherence on the administrative side, trying to promote NIL and not viewing it as a potential adversary to your capital fundraising projects. to be more specific, when CDC's minions and fundraisers go out to meet with a well-heeled alumni, there isn't a slide deck for NIL. So I'll just leave it at that. Our competitors are sending out messages directly from the AD saying, here's how your NIL changed so-and-so's life. And then there's a 5-minute video production of him being able to buy his mom a new house in a safer neighborhood. So that kind of stuff isn't happening at Texas. That said, because Texas has so many successful alum, both of the upper middle class variety who are just giving their monthly donation, but then also the more well-heeled variety, we're still doing well in NIL sort of despite ourselves, not making it a coherent sort of across the board effort. So I think Ian absolutely nailed that. Where do we outshine others? I'm not sure so much in any individual area we're outshining people. Except I'd say in totality, other than that one thing we mentioned, we're about a 9 out of 10 in everything else. Facilities, engagement, player support, family support, recruiting, development, just staffers being on the ball, being on top of stuff, helping solve people's problems, academic support. We're just good across the board. But I can't think of a particular area where we're just the best. Where would that be?
I know one area where Texas is definitely ahead of their rivals to the north is that they have one guy who's actually in charge.
I knew you were going to twist this into an OU.
When Sark says, I want you to find these players, and I want it, it's all clear. Everything reports to Sark. All authority flows from Sark.
CDC and Sark have clear hierarchies. There's no question as to who's in charge of what.
There's no bottlenecks. There's none of that.
That is true. I like Rexanne Charles' comment. I want the baby's take on a running game. She's for it. She likes moving objects.
Yeah.
She likes movement. Flash. All right. Anything else on this question, or did we hit it pretty well?
It's pretty good. If the Texas One Fund had a little more institutional infrastructure, that would help to make sure that things could keep going for a long time.
Yeah, I'm not sure how that'll play out, but I think a lot of this is going to get redone.
Yeah. But the SEC, there's a lot of schools in the SEC that have like a cabal of donors that just keep things on a steady ship all the time. And like Alabama has that. Maybe Nick Saban maximizes it more than any other coach. Duh. But it's still there for the next guy.
Yeah, like a thing that Auburn's done that's really interesting is they used to be heavily dependent on like a rich guy. And what they did is they realized, I think, hey, being dependent upon the whims of a rich guy is not great for our program and our decision-making. And what Auburn does have is a lot of pretty successful upper-middle-class alums. Like, it's a pretty good school. There's an engineering part of the school. You know, there's a more tech component, if you will. Tim Cook is an Auburn grad. I don't think most people know that. And so what they did is they did a pretty broad appeal to the breadth of their fan base, basically saying, hey, everybody chip in $20 a month, $50 a month. And Auburn has a really good NIL and structure in that way. And it started at the AD. It's not because Hugh Freeze is going out there making that happen. It's because the athletic department says none of our capital projects matter if we don't have a good product on the football field. So I think that's an approach that Texas could emulate, at least at that specific level. But the good thing about Texas is even when we're not at sort of maximizing an NIL at our potential, at 70% of our potential, we're top, you know, top 10 easily, probably top five. All right. Anything else?
Let's hope Tim Cook never takes a particular interest in college football.
Very unlikely. Extremely unlikely. All right. This is the most important question. If you put Homer at guard and Ian at tackle, would Paul get through and make the sack? If so, what pass rushing abilities would you use? Power, speed, swim move, etc. All right. So this question is, it's, am I able to line up where I want and go against either one of them individually multiple times? Is this one play? Are they able to double team me? Am I lined up in between them in like a four eye? Am I in a, am I three technique shading Connor's outside shoulder? Ian's going to try to double me. I mean, this is a pass rush, he says. So my thought is that I have to come up with an approach to attack either one of you, depending on where I'm lined up. Is that fair?
I think you cannot go inside of Connor and take advantage of the fact that there's no center.
Well, that's fine. We're pretending there's an offensive line.
Okay.
There's a full offensive line. This isn't one of those.
Like, and then within that parameter, there'd be like a cone or something that you can't go inside of unless you work Connor over to get back across.
Yes.
Okay.
No, this is a football game. There's an offensive line.
Okay, great.
I've got defenders on my side. There's a 10 next to me, and there's 10 next to you. There's nine next to you.
It's a whole game. It's a whole game's worth of
Paul Wadlington highlights.
Here's what I think would happen. Me and Connor would devise our double team plan.
Okay.
And our rules. And then we would repeatedly blow them and blame each other and argue about whose fault it was.
Just like our show. Just like the deep dive.
Just like the deep dive.
So for Ian, I'm gonna just go pure bull rush.
Yeah.
There's a size differential. Ian will study. He didn't play on the line, but he's going to study. He's going to try to have good technique. I don't doubt it. Playing him at tackle was a bad move, in my opinion.
I think that was okay.
Well, playing you at center would be disastrous as well.
I can overset and try to turn you back into Connor.
Okay, but that's not going to happen because I'm going to bull rush you and I'm going to run through you. So Connor will be superfluous.
I think Paul has, depending on what shape you're in for this.
that's going to be another factor. If you said it was a whole game, I'm going to be on an oxygen mask about 12 plays in.
Paul has 50 plus pounds on me.
Yes.
And is also probably more athletic too.
And taller.
And taller.
So I can get my hands on you before you can even touch me, right?
I'm not a bad athlete, but I'm not like an above average one by any stretch of the imagination.
But I'm older than you, and at any given play, even though I'm winning, there's a 12 to 15% chance I blow out my hamstring.
Or your Achilles.
Or my Achilles. So this could be a problem. With Connor, I'm going to respect the size and the power, but I've got height, and I think I've got more quickness. I think I can spin move him. I think I can take gaps. I think I can try to get him to shuffle one direction and I can reverse and get a swim move on him. He'd have to weigh in on this.
My strategy is going to always be to try to turn you into Connor, like not transform you, but get you into Connor.
Not metamorphosize me into an excellent YouTube producer.
Try to sneak elbows into your ribs while you're grappling with him.
Oh, Connor's here.
Anything it takes to wear you down. Body shots.
The weird part was, so I played left tackle badly in high school. I was actually quicker. I remember being horrified one time we were playing Wichita Falls Rider. I went to Denton Ryan, and I got bull rushed. And I was good. I could set well enough. I played defensive tackle a little bit too, so I was actually quicker. Not now, but at that stage. And I remember this D end took me like a strong side D end just took me. I kept planting my foot. There was nothing I could do. He was just sliding me back into the quarterback. So it's actually the bull rush that would get me more when I was younger.
Interesting.
Yeah. Now though, I think you'd get me with the speed rush.
Yeah, I've got more length, unfortunately, than both of these gentlemen.
Yeah.
Paul, what position did you play in high school again?
I played offense and defense. I played on the offensive line. I played guard, and then on defense, I played defensive end in a 3-4.
Do you know what would be a mutt? Okay. Did you start at defensive end, or was that?
I rotated.
Yeah, I think the more fun question would actually be if you gave Ian like 50 reps, could he get a sack on a Paul left tackle, Connor guard, or Connor left tackle, Paul guard offensive line combo?
Again, the risk of injury over a certain age on any given snap is there. So when I blow up my Achilles, you will get a sack. Any play I don't blow up my Achilles, you will not get a sack.
Yeah, I think the exhaustion would set in for all
three of us. I would probably only try 10 times. Let's just say 10. Because if I haven't gotten it by 10, I'm probably just giving up.
Well, that's tricky because Paul was a guard and I was a tackle. So both of us actually have some very basic O-line background.
That's what I'm saying. Can I get even one? Because, like, can Paul get a sack if he gets enough reps against us? 100%.
Yeah.
There's no question. But can I?
I would say in the 50 range, yeah. 10, I don't know about if we're fresh.
Honestly, my goal would be to injure you before you can get 50 reps.
That you can maximize?
I would just because I wouldn't just settle for, like, walling you off. I'm going to try to drive you into the ground and then, like, land on you.
Paul can be dirty.
I can't go 50 reps without an injury of some sort.
Got it. Me too.
Come on, dude. Hey, the other day, my son and I were screwing around throwing the baseball, which is weird because he doesn't even like baseball. He's like a football wrestling guy. But he dribbled a ball to me, and I had this vision of where you kind of run to it laterally and subtly bend, you know, at your hips and then pick it up and flip it to him.
Yeah.
And it didn't happen that way.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I was very like old, you know, like old stop animation of like King Kong movies, like from the 30s where he's like, wah! That's how I was moving. It wasn't fluid. That was disconcerting to me.
Yeah. I can't believe you thought you were going to barehand it.
I thought I was going to barehand it. Just flex, you know, flexibly flip it up to him, and yeah. It didn't play out that way. I think I even had an audible groan when I bent.
To answer the question, yeah, I think Paul gets the sack on however many reps. Now, if we get to double team on one rep, I like me and Ian's odds just because it's two humans on one human. But once you get,
what if I pick up Ian and use him to club you?
If you use him to batter me, there's potential there.
Okay.
All right, I'll hop off, guys. But we want to get this question from Splendid Daddy too.
We had a super chat.
Well, Ian, did you have something to say?
One time when I was 27, I was playing. I hadn't played in a while. I was playing on two-hand touch. Never mind. Just go.
All right, we'll hit this.
All right, Splendid Daddy, thank you very much for your super chat. Is there an amount of money UT would be willing to pay Sark to keep him out of the NFL long-term? I don't think it's a question of money, actually. I think it's a good question. I think if Sark accomplishes what he wants to at Texas, a couple of national titles, maybe just one, I don't know, maybe a couple, I think he'll go to the NFL because that's the highest level of challenge. I don't think it'll be a money issue. What do you reckon, Ian?
I agree. I think the drain of running everything UT will have him. That's the thing I'd worry about. So at some point, it's just like, you know, I could just call plays.
Yeah.
And not run all this stuff. Yeah.
It's so tiring. It's a beating to be a college football coach right now. You're well compensated. You know, people are always like, where's the thanks? It's like, that's what the money is for, right? You can make incredible generational changing money for your family being a college football head coach at Texas or any other elite job. However, what they ask the head coach to do now, and kind of what Texas asks the head coach to do even more, it's a lot, man. And it's a very impressive display of Sark's energy and his organizational skills that he's able to pull it off. Honestly, he's sold as this amazing play caller and play designer and all that. And We've seen evidence of that, and obviously he's not bad. The thing that have impressed me the most about Sark have almost nothing to do with any of that stuff. It's everything else.
I think if he were doing that full time though in the NFL,
yeah,
you would even see another level. And with like professional quarterbacks, I think there's a good chance that he's just going to want to go challenge himself in that way at some point.
Yeah, and let's be clear, most coaches, if they're honest in their heart of hearts, think the NFL is the highest level of the game, and proving yourself there is the most impressive thing to do as a coach. And Sark knows because he coached in the NFL. He knows how hard it is. He knows the degree of parity. He knows how every game is decided by a thin margin, right? So that's just the nature of it. And I don't think money would be the compelling factor. I think it would be, you know, he's not going to take a massive pay cut to go to the NFL, and he wouldn't have to. I think the issue would be challenge and sort of moving on to that next horizon.
Yep.
That's all I got on that. What do you got, Ian? Anything else? Does Izzy have anything?
Nope. I think he'll want to coach Arch as well. And maybe Dia Bell, we'll see, or KJ Lacy. I think Arch for sure.
I think if we win two titles in a row, I don't think any of that matters.
Yeah. I think what he does when Arch's career is over at Texas, that's what I'm going to watch out for.
Interesting final question or comment from our friend, Scott Gerlach.
Hey.
The alpaca. Very good point, which you'd expect from Scott. The flip side of that is if you do have the program management aspect of college down, it's a skill set that's super scarce. Agreed. Sark wouldn't be the best play caller in the NFL. That's also true.
I don't know if Sark knows that that's true.
That's also part of it, right?
Sark may be like, no, I am the best play caller in the NFL. Watch me show you. And he may want to go. That's what you're saying, right? He may want to go prove himself as a play caller in the NFL.
Yeah, I think that's the main thing. And ultimately, it's the competitiveness in the NFL week to week, right? We have games on our schedule that we are going to win. It doesn't really matter how we prepare or what we do. We could have water balloon fights that whole week of practice. Okay?
Yeah.
In the NFL, that's just not a thing. And people go, oh, Jacksonville sucks. Jacksonville can beat your ass in any given week if you're the best team in the NFL if you don't play well. Sorry, Izzy. I didn't mean to say. She looked at you like, ooh, could he say that?
It's kind of like the Red River Shootout.
That's right.
Every week.
Every week.
This team has a game plan for you that's dialed in like you wouldn't believe. And they're all going to play like their mortgage is on the line because that's what it is.
And by the way, in the NFL, if your quarterback gets hurt, everyone shrugs and goes, so what? Go win. Like, yeah, there's not a lot of sympathy and like, you know, Sark's our guy. Oh, he had a tough deal of the cards this year. We'll get him next year. There's not a lot of that in the NFL. So, you know, it is the highest level of competition in coaching. Yeah. By the same token, there are some coaches that just are better suited to the college game and they thrive there. They're great coaches too. But, you know, I'll just say this. When we were looking to hire a coach and we got Tom Herman and I had dreams of Jim Harbaugh, my other dream was Kyle Shanahan. And so I sort of reached out through mutual friends of a friend of a friend that know Kyle Shanahan. And the idea of him coaching at Texas, because a couple of people brought it up, was like laughable. Like,
I wonder though if that's changed now that it's harder to be in charge in the NFL.
That's an interesting question.
The 49ers are not in amazing shape.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, I mean, degrees of control, things like that. These things can change. So this is not immutable, and it can shift, and it can shift not just within the two sports relative to each other, but with individual guys, like what they value. Yes.
Do you know what would have been a good test of this until it turned out that circumstances weren't what we thought? Chapel Bill in North Carolina.
Yeah.
It's going to be a perfect test case for this.
But well, you got Yoko Ono in there breaking up the Beatles.
It turns out that he is a puppet. So
the greatest coach in the game is being taken down by gridiron Yoko Ono. Pretty funny. All right. On this final note and on that adorable face, this has been the deep dive. Thank you all so much for your commentary in the chat. Thank you for your excellent questions. This remains the best fan base of all the YouTube shows, in my opinion. You guys ask great questions. Let's keep it going. Subscribe to the channel. Make sure you hit the like button and make sure you keep those great questions and all that great chat commentary coming. For Ian Boyd, for Izzy Boyd, and for me, Paul, thanks very much.